Hi, this is Kia, host of the Female Veterans Podcast, and you're listening to the American Heritage Podcast.
Hey, my guest today is Kia Baker. Kia, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on my show. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so we got linked up by Instagram. I was kind of following some stuff you were doing. You were kind of following some stuff I was doing. And you reached out to me about, you know, podcasting and things like that and mentioned that you might like to come on a guest on my show. And I said, yeah, awesome. Bring it on. You know, I've been looking at some of your stuff and we're totally aligned with our missions as far as helping veterans and things. We kind of have a little bit different approach. Your podcast features more of the female veterans specifically. What's the name of your show?
The Female Veterans Podcast.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, so I was looking at some of your back catalog and some of the guests you've had on, and you've had some really interesting people on.
Oh, absolutely. Every single one of those women are super special to me, and their stories are impactful and compelling.
Yeah, I was looking up, and there are some people out there who really kind of poured their hearts out on your show and talked about some of their issues that they had while serving. And I got to be completely, totally honest and blunt, you know, as a male serving in the military, you know, I'm focused on doing my job and doing my thing. And I really don't pay a whole lot of attention to anything other than that. So when I hear stories about females undergoing like military sexual trauma and sexual assault, like I know that's a real thing. It's obviously a real thing. And we have so many different trainings on it, but that's not something I've ever witnessed or experienced. So for me, it's not something that I really think about. So to listen to your show is interesting because it kind of puts a little bit different perspective on it. Like you hear about those kind of things second and third hand, but I've never known anybody who's experienced those things personally. So it's good to kind of get some of that insight from time to time and to kind of get out of my own little bubble. I recently just interviewed another female who was a homeless veteran for a time being. And she was in Operation Desert Shield in the 90s. And she herself was a victim of military sexual trauma. And she was the first person that I had ever talked to, you know, over 12 years in service. So it was interesting to kind of hear some of her experiences and how that affected her even 35 years later, really. I mean, yeah. She has several disabilities and she really struggles with it. And I like to think that those kind of things 35 years after the fact, you know, maybe have gotten better, but I'm not so sure. So in your experience, like what can you speak to as far as, you know, that kind of crisis, I'll call it, within our ranks?
Well, I can tell you this. I talk to a lot of women, obviously, and even more that actually don't come on the show. And it is always surprising to me to find how many people are still affected by the way they're treated as a woman in the military, even to this day. Like even in 2019, the way things are still sort of like, kind of like a boys' club. And it's not that these women want to, you know, cry about it. We're vets. We suck it up, you know, but the things that happen are real. And these things do affect women, and we're different than men, obviously, in the way they affect us and what we have to deal with as women in the military. And it's not all bad. I don't have, you know, all very traumatic stories. I have some really amazing stories of women who served as well, but the actual serving itself impacts us as women just differently because we're just different.
Yeah, for sure. So how many different women have you talked to so far that have been in the military and that have experienced something like that?
You mean like a military sexual trauma?
Yeah. Like I'm curious as to, you know, how prevalent do you think that is? I'm hoping that the answer is rare, but you know, I have a feeling that I might be surprised.
Well, unfortunately, I'd like to tell you that it's rare, but it's not. It's actually extremely common. And the thing about it is the statistic, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs and DOD, is 1 in 4 women are a victim of sexual assault in the military. And those are the women who report. Now, I speak to a lot of women who don't report because they see what happens to women when they do. And this has been going on, you know, forever. So unfortunately, out of the women I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of women, I would say probably at least 100 women have confided in me that they have experienced a military sexual trauma, and hundreds more who knew about them.
Wow. Yeah, I had no idea. You know, that's, I'm sorry to hear that. That's really unfortunate. And, you know, you like to think that the U.S. military is better than that because, you know, we pride ourselves on being a professional fighting force. But at the same time, like, how can we do that if we're allowing that kind of thing to happen? So what do you think is the main motivator for that kind of behavior? Do you think it's because people think they get away with it because it's like a boys club, or do you think it's something else?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of different psychologies that go into that type of thinking. But I know there was a time where the government would give people an option to go into the military to avoid, you know, say jail time, for example. And then that gives the opportunity for certain types of people to go into the military that may not be the best quality. And in addition to that, you just have some people who have a low regard for women in general, just outdated ways of thinking that end up in the military. Yes, it is, historically speaking, a boys' club, because women in the military, if you don't look at, you know, millions of years ago, thousands of years ago, historically speaking, if you look at recent history, women in the military is relatively new. And so for hundreds of years, it has been men and this tight unit, and now women are a part of that and increasing roles in all across the armed forces. So learning to adjust to that and adapt to that, of course, there's so many trainings, but there are just certain types of people who will still take advantage of that, I think. So it's just psychological with the type of human being that goes into the military. For example, on one of my episodes, KJ was a guest, and she spoke very candidly about a guy she dated in the military, and she went and deployed and was called back from the Middle East. I think she was in Afghanistan. And she had to go back and testify against this guy, had committed 28 rapes. And it was just mind blowing. Yeah.
And she dated him, and she didn't have any idea that he was a serial rapist?
Not really. Like she said, in retrospect, she had some indications just by how kind of aggressive he was as a guy. And then I guess there was some sort of altercation he got into with a woman after they were done dating, where he broke her nose at a party. Wow. You know, and so then that led to more information coming out. And then it came out that he had been this perpetrator of all this violence against women. And it's not everybody, I think, for the most part, especially in my experience, all my friends were guys. They kept me safe. Like, I had the most amazing amount of trust for the men that I served with. Yet at the same time, there was a rapist loose on the base. And so for us as women, knowing that women were being raped and that this person was on the loose, essentially, we were afraid, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's a totally crazy story that, you know, that one guy did that to so many different people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I think about, you know, the type of person who could do that, he's also probably the type of person that's very good at maybe covering tracks, you know, or like manipulation. So that might be part of the reason why, you know, that he got away with it for so long, is because he wasn't your stereotypical, maybe hop out of the bushes type of guy like you see on movies. Like maybe it was a little more like grooming type behavior, you know, that we learn about in some of those kind of trainings.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And speaking of that particular story, KJ actually did end up becoming a survivor of a sexual trauma while she was deployed. And that guy was actually a guy she liked, she had a crush on, she, you know, was friends with. And then one day they just decided, you know how it is, you just decide, okay, cool, we're gonna hook up. And then when they went to go, so she was like into it, right? They went to go do that, he changed. and just a horrific assault happened, which she candidly discusses on the episode. And it's just shocking. It's jarring, really, to hear that you could, like, this could be your friend. This could be someone you know, you work with in your unit. And then suddenly, even just on a date, it turns into this horrific date rape, you know, scenario.
Yeah. No, that's crazy to think about that even happens to people. Like, I know, I know it does, but, you know, I mean, I wish it didn't. That's really all I can say is like, that's just, that's freaking terrible. Have you noticed any men that have had any of these kind of stories? Cause I hear that that's kind of a growing thing too.
Well, here's the thing about the men. This happens. Assaults do happen to men. Sexual assaults happen to men in the military as well. I don't do a lot of those interviews because I focus primarily on women. In fact, you will be the first male I interview for my show.
Awesome. Thank you.
But what I can tell you is the statistic is 1 in 100. So, and those are the people that report, because obviously as a male, you know, male and female, we have like different egos and different ways that we handle these kinds of traumas as well. So a lot of time, men, they feel more shame. You know, women feel shame, don't get me wrong, but they feel more shame because of the fact of how we are stereotyped, I guess, as male and female, and they don't want to come forward and they don't want to report because they don't want everyone to know what happened to them. It's, they feel, you know, very isolated and very ashamed. So of those that report, it's about 1 in 100 and rising.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's crazy. I mean, that's obviously way too many for that too. You know, it's terrible that that happens to anybody, you know, when I think about those kind of things happening and what my kids are going to grow up to do, you know, I mean, I always kind of worry because, you know, my little daughter who's 3 years old, you know, I mean, I want her to take all these self-defense classes and all this stuff so she can handle herself, you know, if and when, God forbid, that situation ever arises, you know, and I hope it doesn't, but you know, I mean, sometimes, unfortunately, it does. So,
It's true.
I know that, you know, that's not the only thing you guys talk about on your show. What are some of the other interesting topics? I mean, now, you know, obviously we kind of went down the dark side. What are some of the positive things that you guys are talking about over there?
Oh my gosh. Well, just the experience in and of itself can be so positive and life-changing. Just the camaraderie. I mean, it's funny because even though a lot of my guests have experienced the darker side of military service, they all say the same thing. When they get out, it's hard because they miss the camaraderie. They miss the family. They miss the unity that, aside of their horrible experience, everything else was like amazing. You know, even for me, I did not have the greatest of all military experiences, but I will tell you this, until the day it wasn't, it was amazing. I had a lot of fun. I met great people, many of whom we are still very close to this day. And just being part of the veteran community is so very incredible because even like you and I, we have that connection. We have this unique like connection that many people don't have that haven't served. It's like a brotherhood, a sisterhood. And that's what we talk about a lot of times. We talk about all the good things that happen, how being in the military changed our lives one way or another. And a lot of times it's really for the better. A lot of people like myself left, you know, a difficult childhood behind, you know, escaped the inner city or just wanted to get out of a small town and see the world and had the opportunity to do that. So there are so many wonderful aspects of military service, the leadership skills, you know, just being able to carry yourself with so much pride. It's just a wonderful thing. So obviously, you know, as female veterans, we feel the same way that the guys do, that it's, you know, a sisterhood, brotherhood, and we just love that family.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's part of the reason why I like this podcast is because I get to meet people such as you. And, you know, we're both passionate about helping veterans. And we realize that now that we're out, like it maybe takes a little bit more effort to have some of those relationships because we're not in such tight quarters. But we also know how important it is to make those relationships and keep those relationships and check up on the people, you know, that we love and that we served with and meet new people who have similar experiences and share their stories. So yeah, it's totally awesome. And I'm glad you're part of that group now.
Thank you. Thank you.
So,
and I love what you're doing too.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, like, you were in the Navy, right?
That's correct.
Okay. What did you do in the Navy?
I was a hospital corpsman.
Oh, cool. So on boats, on land?
I didn't deploy. So I served during the Clinton administration. And as everyone knows, he decreased defense spending. Mm-hmm. So I actually elected to go to the strictest base, probably in the Navy, which is the training base at Great Lakes. And I did so that I could stay with a dear friend of mine. And we thought if we chose this base, we wouldn't get separated. And we were right. But the thing about that was being stationed at the Naval Hospital meant that people didn't want to go to that base. So we got stuck there. We could never leave. So I never got to deploy. I never got to see the world like I joined to do. But I had an amazing experience and I love Chicago for it.
Yeah. No, I hear you there. You know, I joined the Air Force because I wanted to kind of see the world, but ended up not seeing a whole lot of it. I saw a couple places stateside and then I saw Iraq and I was like, well, I got to see some of the world, but not quite like I was expecting. But, you know, that's the way it goes in the military. You know, you, mm-hmm. you take what they give you and you keep trucking.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that. So my experience was really cool in Chicago. I did for the first couple years. I did medical records at the hospital, and then I trained in pharmacy. And as you know, on the inside, as a technician, it's like being a pharmacist in the civilian world, which I absolutely loved. And that was my career. I enjoyed it. I served 5 years active and 3 years in active reserve.
Okay, great. So when you got out of the military, you know, what was it like for you to leave the military and then walk into civilian life? How did that go?
Well, one of the things I talk about on the podcast is the transition out. And why I talk about that on the Female Veterans Podcast is because the transition out for me was incredibly difficult. Now, I thought I was going to, I should preface this by saying I realized a little bit late that my pharmacy training was not going to translate to the civilian world. Prudent to go to college for it, something I already knew and had been doing for the last 3 years and was good at. It seemed like a waste of money. So I decided to go into corporate America. And at corporate then in the late 90s is not the same way it is with the whole millennial changes that have taken place. It was a very different place. And I thought that I was going to go slay that world, I will tell you. And I hated it. Yeah. There just wasn't the camaraderie. There wasn't the sense of unity. And I didn't vibe in that world for long. I mean, it took me a while to find my footing. And incidentally, I almost ended up homeless. And my marriage fell apart. And I was left penniless, homeless, and without a job. And the place where I was living had gotten sold out from underneath us. And we had days to get out. And it was just like a bad situation. And I thought, oh my God, like how did this happen? But I was lucky because I had some friends that came through. I found an organization, a company that really valued veterans. I got a job there and I started working my way up. Eventually went to school, got my degrees, but all the while I started helping other veterans who were having difficult transitions out. And that's kind of how the evolution of how I ended up doing what I do now. Men and women back then, like, do you know how to fill out for disability? Do you know how to enroll for VA healthcare? Do you know what all the benefits that you're eligible for are and walking them through the process? And that's kind of
Yeah, I think we lost audio there for a second too. Can you hear me now? Yeah, I think it's our internet connection maybe. We'll give it a second to catch back up. Cool thing about this is we can edit, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, there you are. All right, welcome back. Yeah, no, thanks for talking about that. You know, that's something I always try to talk to people about, because I thought for a long time, you know, it was just me that had a hell of a time transitioning out of the military. And I've only been out 2 years. So I'm still in the middle of it, to be honest. But it's cool to talk to other people, because now I know that, you know, I'm not weird. Well, but I'm not that weird. Like I'm still weird. It's not all me, you know, there's other people who've had similar issues to me. So what is it, if you don't mind me asking, you don't have to name the company, but like, what is the line of work that you're in now?
Oh, well, now I am actually working for myself.
Oh.
And, but if you're asking what I ended up training in, I trained in forensic accounting. I do that now. That's what I went to school for. But I worked in, before I became a stay-home mom, I was a stay-home mom for a while. And I actually just re-entered the workforce because my kids are old enough and a little bit more self-sufficient. So I have time to really give back to the community like I wanted to, the veteran community. And so before that was stay-home mom. But before that, when I was in corporate America, I was in administration. I was in management.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So forensic accounting, that sounds pretty cool.
It is cool. And I went into it because I am horrible at math. So I wanted to challenge myself to improve, and I did. But I have like a weird urge to bust people that are doing awful things. And yeah. So I thought, people think that financial crimes are victimless because no one's murdered. But people, there are victims, serious victims, and a lot of times they're little old ladies who get on, you know. So I was really, really into that for quite a bit of time. And leading up to the recession actually really propelled me forward in that field as well, because I thought, oh my gosh, look at all this financial crime that's happening, affected the whole country. So I was going to school for that. In fact, I am still going to school for that. I have 7 classes left.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. You know, you get to catch bad guys, but not necessarily have to like kick doors in to do it.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's so, just a lot of time and research.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that you were almost homeless for a while. And I don't know if you're familiar with some of my back stuff or not, but I do a lot of work with homeless veterans myself.
Yes.
And I'm always curious about that topic. So if you don't mind me asking, like, if you had any story to tell about that, that might be beneficial for other people listening, like, what was it like to be on the verge of being homeless? And then how did you bounce back from that?
In all honesty, night terrors, a lot of night terrors, a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. And then once I pushed past like what was about to happen to me and what my life had become, because now I had been married for 5 years. I'd been in a relationship. And what basically happened was my husband just switched all of his accounts. I got laid off of a job and I hadn't been working for maybe 2 months. And one day he just switched all of his accounts and I left me with nothing, basically. And I had to figure out what I was going to do, how I was going to move forward. And unfortunately, after 9/11, I go by Kia. Everyone calls me that. But my full name is Zakia. And it is a Islamic name. And my parents were just unique people and wanted to name me something that meant intelligent and loved it. So, but as you can imagine, after 9/11, it was literally impossible for me to get a job because of my name. So, and it had been, you know, from the time I left the military, if you called me in for an interview, I was going to get the job. Like, and my skills that I was trained with in the military have always served me well. And, but after 9/11, it was really difficult. And so having been laid off from the first job that I had after that, I knew that it was going to be hard for me to find a job again. And then when my personal life fell apart, I will say I had a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I reached out to people. I talked to people. And I always like to say, you know, let people who love you know what's going on, especially in light of all the suicides that we see. Like, a lot of people will keep it to themselves, and the next thing you know that they're gone. Also, my friends saw that I was struggling, and they reached out to me. And that's so important as well when you have a veteran who is struggling and you don't, you know, just talking to them, because it could save a life. Now, I wasn't suicidal, but I was really low. And my friends came through. They were like, what can we do? Tell us what's going on. What, because I was embarrassed. I was ashamed of what was happening in my life, you know, even though it was through no real fault of my own. It was just so happened that they sold my building and said, hey, we're making these condos. And the owner didn't come by. I'd been living there for 3 years. The owner didn't come by or say anything. He just sold it and was gone. And so we were sort of blindsided by that. And I had a very short amount of time to sort of get it together. But I was determined to, and that's where it comes from. Like, I had resolved within myself that I was not going to land on the streets. I had people that loved and cared about me. And I actually had a wonderful woman who had been married a bunch of times and divorced a bunch of times. And we went to go, a friend of mine agreed to move with me. So we became roommates, and we went to her building to look at her apartment. And when I told her, yeah, I'm divorcing, and I just, you know, I kind of told her my story, she sort of took me in and said, okay, listen, I'm going to give you this apartment at a little bit of a discounted rate. You guys, I'm going to give you this time to come up with the money, you know, and it just sort of, everything started to align and everything started to work in my favor. But it wasn't until I said to myself, I'm not going to just give up. I'm not going to succumb to this. I'm going to figure out how I'm going to do this. And I adopted a mindset of positivity, because at first I was so negative that I didn't see a way out. Right. And then talking to my friends and like them coming to support me and trying to throw ideas my way, I started to pull myself out of it. So that's exactly what happened.
Awesome. Well, good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're a success story. You know, that's your mindset. I'm pretty confident that there's probably nothing you can't do once you put your mind to it. So. Yeah. So that's awesome that you've put your mind towards helping veterans now, because I'm confident that, you know, with you on the team, you know, things are going to happen. So because of your story, and I think it's really inspirational, I want to introduce you to a couple people after we're done here, because they're doing similar things. Susan and Jennifer are part of an organization I'm with called Passageways that helps homeless veterans. Right now they only can help men, but very shortly that will be remedied because they're expanding and they're going to be able to help homeless female veterans.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant.
But I'd like to introduce you to them because I think you guys have a lot to talk about, especially with your background and what I just heard, which is really inspirational. So yeah, I would love to hook that up with you guys.
I'd love that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I mean, anything I can do to kind of spread the word and connect the dots to, you know, help veterans in general, I mean, I'm all about. So in the meantime, anybody listening to this would like to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Well, you can find me on Instagram at the Female Veterans Podcast. You can find me at Twitter at FemVetPodcast. And you can always reach me through Gmail at zakiabaker@gmail.com. And that's Z-A-K-I-A, last name Baker. I know that's pretty crazy, at gmail.com. And I love to hear from anyone. And as if there's any women who are listening who are interested in sharing their story with me, I would love to hear it.
Yeah, definitely. I have a couple in mind that I'm going to send your way after we're done here. But I want to thank you for taking your time to come and on my show and share your story and what you guys have been up to.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been such an incredible experience. And I just got to say that I love what you're doing. And I'm so happy that we could connect in this way.
No, absolutely. No, the pleasure is all mine. Appreciate it. Thanks. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, be sure to subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, share it with your friends, and then visit the website at www.AmericanHeritagePodcast.com. You can watch the YouTube videos there. You can listen to the show. You can hit the merchandise tab and check out the t-shirts and hats and all that cool stuff. You can also find me on Facebook at American Heritage Podcast. I have a Facebook page there, so be sure to go on Facebook and like that. You can check me on Instagram. Once again, that's American Heritage Podcast on Instagram. If you want to talk to me, you can message me on Instagram. I'm there a lot. If you guys want to donate to the show, there's a tab at the very end of every show. That's the support tab, which will take you to Anchor, which runs off Stripe. Anything you donate to the show will be used to help the show grow and help me do the stuff I do for the homeless veterans at Passageways. I do a lot of material for them. I don't charge them a dime. I use my podcast as a way to get the word out about them because it's an organization that I'm passionate about. If you want to learn more about them, go to www.passagewaysltd.org and learn what they're doing to help homeless veterans. Thanks for listening.